ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Research into women's pain shows that it's more common, it's disproportionately intense, and when women report it, it's often dismissed or misdiagnosed or treated differently to men's pain. For example, women are more often prescribed sedatives or antidepressants after surgery instead of actual painkillers. In Victoria, the state government's conducting an inquiry into women's pain, and as part of that, it's asking for women's experiences of pain and its management in a new survey. If you identify as a woman, I'd love to hear from you on our text line about how pain has affected your life and how it's been dealt with by the medical profession when you've engaged with them. Our guests today have been thinking about this very carefully. They're co-chairs of the Pain Inquiry in Victoria. Sue Matthews is the CEO of the Women's Hospital in Melbourne. Professor Sue Matthews, I should say. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Well, thanks so much for having us.
It's a pleasure. And Fee McRae is a patient advocate and the founder of a group called Private Parts Community, which encourages conversations about formerly hidden or stigmatised parts of our lives, including illness and pain. Fee, great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Fee, tell us a little bit about your story. When did you first start having problems that led you to speak with doctors?
I had quite a late experience in terms of the kind of general story of this kind of stuff. A lot of people start experiencing pelvic pain when they start menstruating. For me, it was in my kind of early to mid-20s I started experiencing pain, which I very much thought was just my version of a painful period, so I should get on with it. By about 24, it was impacting my work. I was a baker at the time, but I thought I will just keep on going and would strap in with hot water bottles and heat packs in my jeans and keep on baking. But I started going to the doctor when it started impacting my work, and was lucky enough to only have to go to a few appointments before someone believed me, which sadly is a rare treat. And I had a great GP who said, we don't know that anything's wrong, but we'll send you for scans anyway. And they found that there was a cyst on my left ovary, and it required pretty urgent surgery. So I was in surgery within a few weeks of that, and that's where the kind of journey with pelvic pain began. Certainly thought that would be the end of my pain once that was removed, but it was just the beginning.
Yeah, I love how at one point you wrote, you were just skipping down the street. Yay, that is done. It's all finished.
The walk out of that surgery, I thought, geez, this is great. I can get back to my life. And sadly, that was the very painful beginning of the next kind of almost decade of my life.
Well, endometriosis, having experienced it myself and having sat over this desk a lot of times with the wheat bag stuck into my pants, I feel for you. But I was reading about how, you know, it's surgery after surgery. It goes on, there's scarring. You have to kind of deal with these ongoing effects. How unusual is it in the stories that you hear through your community of finding that GP who goes, hey, radical idea, let's have a look inside?
No one gets that the first time. I think it's hopefully changing. The awareness is growing at a very rapid rate, which is fantastic, and that's because of the patients sharing their stories and advocating for better care. No one have I spoken to has had that experience. Most people are waiting years for diagnosis, or if you are getting suggested that process, you're waiting for years.
And what kinds of things are being said to people in those initial consultations when they're going, no, it's fine, go off and strap on your wheat pack again?
I think a lot of it is we don't know, so we're not going to investigate. It's a not wanting to open that box. I think a lot of people, their pain is minimised. It's all a bit of a hangover of the hysteria era, I think, or we're told that it couldn't be that painful, you know. I think most people I speak to specifically with pain like endo pain have been told that's just your period, that's what a period should feel like, and you're probably a bit weaker for not being able to work with that. I certainly felt that myself, just the societal pressure of, okay, this is a pain in that area, so maybe I'm just not as tough as I thought I was.
Yeah.
And I think we put that on ourselves as much as anything. And that's to do with education around this stuff.
Oh, and I love how you've called the group the private parts community, because it's like, it's a pain in that area. Shut up.
Exactly.
Let's not talk about that. There's still quite a lot of stigma.
Yeah.
So Matthews, I noticed you nodding along as Fee McRae was talking, and as the CEO of the Women's, how often do you hear these kinds of stories?
We hear them all the time. I've been working in women's health for decades, and have certainly heard this throughout my whole experience in women's health. The comment that Fee made about hysteria, it was only in 1980 when that was no longer made an actual diagnosis.
Oh, my Lord.
So, you know, it is the Greek word for uterus, which, you know, when you connect, hysteria is women. And, you know, the drama queen, the, you know, all of those things that women get labeled as, people start to think, like Fee said, they start to think it's them. It's just the way they're responding to it. And we've seen that across healthcare for forever. And I think Fee's right, it's changing, and that's really a good thing. And this inquiry is designed to listen to the women so that we can understand better. We think we have some ideas of what we'll hear, but we know there will be things that we hear that we didn't even know we were going to hear. So I think that's one of the best parts about this inquiry.
Yeah, the unknown unknowns. Thank you, Donald Rumsfeld.
Correct.
I should just clarify for our listeners too, but this is a state government inquiry, but it's about your experiences with the Victorian healthcare system. So if you live somewhere else and you've had an experience of pain management within the Victorian healthcare system, go right ahead, hit up the Victorian government website and participate in the survey. And you can also make a submission to the inquiry. I got told at the age of 12, says one person, that I had bad genes and there was nothing that could be done for the hideous menstrual pain. Fast forward to age 29, years of missed days at school and work, etc. I was finally diagnosed with endometriosis, had surgery, and have now been mostly lucky to have great treatment. It shouldn't have taken 17 years of pain. I'm really sorry to hear that. I am not surprised, I'm afraid, but I'm really sorry to hear that things that you've been going through. So the latest step in this inquiry is this latest survey that's been launched, but there was one last year too of more than 1,750 Victorian women, and it found that 2 in 5 live with chronic pain and a third reported insensitive and disrespectful practitioners who left them feeling dismissed and unheard. Why do we need another survey? That seems quite compelling.
Well, that survey was to understand how prolific it is. This survey that we're doing is to understand the experience. So that's very different in people being able to tell their stories. And I think that's really important for people to be able to share what they experience. And that's what this part of the inquiry is. There's several stages of it. There will be focus groups, and we will submit recommendations and a report in the end of this calendar year. So we're really interested in experiences so that we can look at models of care, what needs to change, what sorts of things could, you know, policy do, could education do, could the clinicians do, et cetera. I think it's really important that we focus on all the different areas. And it's not just pelvic pain. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we have women experience. There are three streams. So one is women who, it's only women who experience it. And then there are
the bikini line issues.
Yeah. But it, not only that, but there are also two other streams of women who, women experience things disproportionately to men. So there are certain things, migraines and, you know, et cetera. Then there are things that women experience differently to men, like cardiac pain. So when a woman goes to an emergency department with a heart attack, they aren't necessarily presenting the way that we traditionally see on television, you know, someone standing on my chest and it's, you know, grabbing at your chest, et cetera. Women don't always experience it that way. And so they're dismissed. They're less likely to be admitted to an intensive care unit. They're more likely, as you said, to be given antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs as opposed to pain medication or to get even looked at and determined. So those are the streams that we're looking at, and we want people to describe their experiences across the whole system.
And so, I mean, listening to some of the stories that people tell, it's tempting to say, well, there's just sexism going on in the healthcare system. How much is it about that, do you think? And how much is it about what doctors are working with, the information that they're supplied from the research about women and pain?
So we have probably centuries of sexism and medical misogyny, and that's going to take time to change, right? So that's, you know, there is that for sure. But there's also the medical curriculum, what's in medical schools, in nursing schools, in midwifery schools, you know, what are they teaching? And, you know, endometriosis takes on average 6.5 to 7 years to get diagnosed. Why is that? Partly because it's not they're not trained in it early enough or long enough. There are certain things that people in medical school will get, you know, 4 hours of education. Well, that doesn't really help when half of your population that you're going to care for as a GP, for example, are women. So, you know, and not dissing the GPs because they do a fabulous job, but I think it's really important that everyone get this education. So some of the things that we will probably recommend will be around education. Some will be around policy. Research has been probably the biggest barrier. Health research is almost always done on men. We call it the reference man. So the typical 70-kilo white man is the traditional person that is studied. And then those studies are experienced just by saying, oh, well, a woman is, you know, about 70 kilos, so they'll get the same medication, the same amount. And that's not necessarily the right thing.
Well, yeah, that hasn't worked so well in the past, has it? They had women having car crashes they were on the wrong dosage of things.
That's right. So they had car crashes after they took a sleeping pill because they didn't realize that women metabolize the same medication differently. And it's not necessarily because of their hormones per se. They just metabolize things differently. But they haven't been included in medical research because they have periods and hormonal swings, et cetera. And I would say that's exactly why they should be included in medical research. So I think those are some of the things that we'll come back to and learn and understand from this inquiry.
Some amazing text messages coming through here, just really layering on the experiences that you've been reporting, Fee McRae. I experienced crushing period pain and male doctors told me it will stop once you have a baby. That's Liz from NAM. That's not been the experience of a lot of people I know with endo. Jane from New South Wales says, a gyno presented me with a pamphlet of different contraceptive options in order to manage pain because they couldn't diagnose what my pelvic pain was. I was baffled that this was apparently my only option. And another says, I had to wait until I was about 28 to find the most amazing doctor who wouldn't let me leave my first appointment for an hour until she had carefully combed through my entire medical history. Give me her name immediately, Laura from Melbourne. Yeah. She goes on, my pain threshold is very high, but I was in constant agony and I felt ashamed that I couldn't function normally. I had PMDD, endometriosis and adenomyosis, which was completely debilitating. She changed my life and she is my angel. Shout out to Dr. Felicity. Oh, there you go. Thank you, Laura. Fee McRae, you run this community, Private Parts Community, and you're a patient advocate and you're the co-chair with Sue Matthews, the CEO of the Women's of this Pain Inquiry in Victoria. How much do you see women's life circumstances and level of disadvantage affecting their ability to get the treatment that they need? Just from the stories that you see coming through, is that an extra layer that affects some women?
Oh, for sure. I definitely think a big thing with access to care is also getting help with government services and things like this. So if you're wanting to, say, try and get disability pension or NDIS, trying to prove you're disabled because of a reproductive health condition is a whole different story. And it's certainly been a long journey for me to do that. And I see a lot of people battling in that arena a lot of the time. There's such a stigma with women's health, and there is a need to feel stoic and be the person who has it all together in the home, in the workplace. I think we are always trying to push ourselves to perform no matter what the circumstances as women. And we don't often have the language to describe our experience because we haven't been told that that experience is okay. I find definitely the biggest hurdle with all of this stuff is the isolation and the loneliness. Even though so many of us are suffering in silence, we have no idea that the person next to us is too, because we haven't been told it's okay to talk about that stuff. So I guess that's where Private Parts came in. I was looking for connection. And, of course, the sick people aren't at the pub or the supermarket. They're at home in bed. So I decided to have a look online for like-minded people. And share stories in the hopes to make people feel less alone and feel like they're heard and their stories are valid.
Well, and we heard about the impact on your work as a baker, but, you know, you've touched on the fact that it messes with your friendships too, doesn't it? You can't go out and hang out.
Absolutely. And I was very lucky in that I have a very strong community that were very willing to go from going to gigs and restaurants to coming and hanging out in my garden or hanging out in bed with me. But most people don't have that. And even if they do, they go from being these very sociable, capable humans, and then they're just not around. And if you're not around, people don't check in, you know. So I think it's really important with this inquiry that we're looking at the impacts on people's mental health and their disconnect from community and making sure that they do have people that they can talk to without feeling gaslit or, you know, isolated.
We're speaking with Fee McRae and Professor Sue Matthews, who are the co-chairs of the Women's Pain Inquiry in Victoria. It's into the Victorian healthcare system, so you're welcome to participate in it if you've had an experience of presenting pain to the Victorian healthcare system. Fee's the founder of the Private Parts Community. You can find them on Instagram, where they share stories about dealing with various life issues, including pain and illness. So we should too, I guess, look at the idea that you know, women report higher pain scores than men. Could this be because men are taught to suppress their pain? I mean, there are barriers that men are facing too, aren't they? They tend not to seek help for their health conditions. Is it an issue that both genders are facing cultural biases in when it comes to their pain management?
There definitely is. There are, you know, certainly concerns on every part. What we would say about the Women's Pain Inquiry is because it's for so long been buried and stigmatized that's why there's a focus on the women's pain at this point in time. I think we've come into our own. We have a window of opportunity with government, both federally and state, that are very interested in women's health and women's pain as being part of it for the Victorian government. But yes, there certainly are other challenges that men would experience disproportionately or differently as well.
This text was amazing. We've heard a lot about pelvic pain issues. There are so many texts I can't even get to on various kinds of pelvic pain. Excuse me. But Tam says, the chest and breast pain that I was experiencing was dismissed so many times over the years and put down to anxiety. I was told to take anti-anxiety meds, seek mental health support, and maybe take some Gaviscon for indigestion, I think. I was eventually diagnosed with high-grade ductal carcinoma in situ, DCIS. Fortunately, my bilateral mastectomy was curative and I caught it in time, says Tam. There is so much anecdotal evidence that my type of cancer causes pain, yet to this day, specialists continue to tell me breast cancer doesn't cause pain. We need more research into women's pain and cancer, says Tam. And that'll send a shiver down the spine of anyone who's had a friend go through breast cancer or gone through it themselves. Just the idea that it can be left undiagnosed and untreated for any period of time. So the pain inquiry is calling for submissions as well as this survey. What would you recommend people do? Where should you make a submission? When should you just do the survey?
I think the submissions are longer. People tend to submit more, and there a lot of researchers are submitting. We're getting lots and lots of feedback. I think it's easier to do the survey. Right. So, you know, the survey does ask you a number of questions. There's free text spaces so you can write things. It's not all about just ticking boxes. So that's, you know, if you want to do something that talks about your own pain, et cetera, the submissions tend to be more around a full submission into experience that. So, for example, the Royal Women's Hospital will put one in. There will be other hospitals, other researchers, et cetera. It doesn't mean that an individual couldn't, but it's more in depth.
And do you feel that the net is cast wide enough to include a big diversity of people? Because I imagine cultural, social, economic factors will all affect people's experience of pain and how it's treated as well.
Yeah, they definitely do. There's a term in medical research called intersectionality, and that is all the different things that intersect to create the experience for an individual. So is the net cast widely enough? Fee and I were just talking about that outside. We will be looking at more social media to certain groups. The focus groups will actually, and target's not the right word, but we'll target those individual groups that we think we're not hearing from enough. So the expert advisory group, at the last meeting, talked about what are the groups that we think are missing in this or that we're not hearing from, and how do we get to them. So there will be focus groups in different cultural communities, in different areas, rural Victoria, etc. So we're hoping that we'll get as wide a net as we possibly can.
And how confident are you that things will change? I mean, we have a lot of inquiries in Australia and governments come and go. Do you feel we're in a moment right now?
Absolutely, I do. I'm very excited about the possibility of this. I wouldn't have taken on the co-chair if I thought it was just going to be a piece of paper, or a little booklet that sits on the shelf in the old term. Now it's not. It's electronic now. But I do think that there will be things that will change. And I think there has to be. I think we've got, 51% of the population are women. And so, and we give birth to 100% of the population. But, so I think that it's really important that we do take action, and our recommendations will be some things that are going to be easier to do than others, but we will also not shy away from putting forward the hard things to tackle that we need to get started on.
Well, the submissions close at the end of July and the final report is due to be delivered by December. Fee McRae, Professor Sue Matthews, thank you both so much for coming into Life Matters today.
Thank you.
Fee McRae is the co-chair of the Women's Pain Inquiry, a patient advocate and founder of the Private Parts Community. You can find them online. And Professor Sue Matthews is co-chair of the Women's Pain Inquiry and CEO of the Women's Hospital in Melbourne. We'll pop some links up to the survey and how to make a submission to the inquiry if that's what you choose to do and you've had an engagement with the Victorian healthcare system on the Life Matters homepage.
ABC Listen, podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.